And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 till noon show. It's 4 minutes past 9, just turned on this Tuesday, the 22nd of April. And I do hope you're very well indeed. It was a tough weekend, wasn't it? Obviously, we learnt yesterday morning of the passing of Pope Francis, and we're going to be joined by a number of guests on the show over the next wee while just to reflect on his passing, of course, and his contribution to the Catholic Church as head of that church, and what comes next, what's his legacy, who might replace him. Also, we have to reflect on the shocking scenes that we awoke to yesterday morning also, and that was the fire at the church in Derrybeg, a wonderful, beautiful church, very popular, of course, amongst locals, but those of us who visited it for one reason or another, the most beautiful setting destroyed in a fire. Devastating for, obviously, the local parish priest, but the local community, but it was felt right across the region and beyond as well. Not a bit wonder it made national news headlines. So we'll also be reflecting on that as well. And what is next? Well, I can tell you what will be next, because I would know that community quite well. It will be rebuilt. It will rise from the ashes. But we'll be reflecting on that. And also after 10, we've got Community Garda information. And there's so much coming up over the next 3 hours. So please stay in touch with us. Now, if you want to contact the show, if you want to maybe reflect on the passing of Pope Francis, or indeed maybe if you wish to reflect on the loss of the church in Derrybeg, maybe you've got fond memories of it, or whatever it might be, whatever you want to talk about this morning, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call in 07491 25000, or in fact you can email the show as always, comments@highlandradio.com. It's a very visual show every day, and it's going to be extra so today. We'll be crossing to Rome and all over the place, effectively. And many of those interviews you can see. So if you want to watch the programme, if you're at home maybe, you're off for Easter, you can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick in your front room or kitchen. Just open the YouTube app and search Highland Radio Ireland. We're across our Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. Of course, the front of all the papers is the passing of Pope Francis. Pope Francis has been remembered as a leader who knew how to give hope, following his death yesterday. This is in the Irish Times. The remains of the pontiff, 88, who doctors said died of a stroke and heart failure, are expected to be transferred to St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican tomorrow morning to allow the faithful pray in their presence. Francis, known for shunning the trappings of papacy, requested that his body be placed in a zinc-lined coffin, which will remain open until the night before his funeral, rather than laying on a raised platform in St. Peter's, as was the case with previous popes. His funeral could take place as early as Friday, with Vatican authorities expected to confirm the details later today. The expectation is it's going to be between Friday and Sunday. This is the Irish Times I'm reading from, by the way. During his papacy, Francis clashed with traditionalists as he pushed for a more inclusive Catholic Church. He spoke out tirelessly for migrants and the marginalised, urged an end to global conflicts, and highlighted the need to protect the environment. President Michael D. Higgins led tributes from Ireland following news of the Pope's death, saying Francis had shared important messages with the world with a unique humility. World leaders also paid tributes, with Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky saying the Pope knew how to give hope, ease suffering through prayer, and foster unity. He prayed for peace in Ukraine. And of course, one of the last requests he made was for peace in Gaza, for the terrible situation to end there. So, as I say, we're going to be speaking to people reflecting on Pope Francis, and also to, you might be interested to know what next. How is his successor chosen? We'll be talking about that extensively. But the successor to Pope Francis will be chosen in the papal conclave. It's a secretive ritual that has endured for at least 800 years. I mean, we got an insight into that perhaps with the recent film Conclave. I didn't rate the film much at all, to be honest with you, but it did give what appeared to be a clear impression of how these things are done, not with the drama and what have you, but just with the setting and the gathering of those charged with making the decision. It ends, as you would know, when white smoke rises above the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican to signal a new pontiff has been elected. But first, Catholics around the world will mourn for Pope Francis. The Vatican Chamberlain Irishman Cardinal Kevin Farrell will officially certify that Francis is dead by calling his name three times at his bedside. The body of the late pontiff will then be dressed in red robes and a white mitre placed on his head. He'll be taken, as I mentioned a little earlier on, to St. Peter's Basilica, where he'll lie in state for 3 days. And just for those of you watching the show, we're seeing live footage now from Rome and St. Peter's Square, already some in there. People, I suppose there's quite a lot of people happened to be there when Pope Francis's death was announced, and we'll be touching base with some of those. But I mean, obviously there's a lot of people milling around the Vatican trying to be close to, I suppose, Pope Francis, the Catholicism, I don't know. Different news stories here in the Irish Independent. Members attending the Irish National Teachers Organisation's annual Congress have called for primary school capitation rates to be revised upwards to the same level of voluntary secondary schools. The INTO meeting in Galway heard that from September, primary schools will receive €224 per pupil towards operational costs for utilities, insurance and resources. They said this amount is not nearly enough to enable primary schools to make ends meet, causing them to rely on parents and other members of the local school community. So you'll know yourself with children in school at all grades. Often you get asked for money for various things. And that's, according to the INTO, and I think it's pretty much established fact, is because the amount paid to each school per pupil is not enough. So for them to give the education and experience to the pupils, they have to go to parents looking for money. A statement from the INTO said the funding shortfall of 162 per pupil compared to voluntary second schools places undue financial pressure on primary schools and highlights the need for a dramatic increase in the capitation grant to help schools manage their day-to-day budgets. Staying with schools, because the junior cycle apparently is going to be overhauled. This is in the Irish Daily Star. Junior cycle grades will be overhauled ahead of the June exams as part of plans announced by Education Minister Helen McEntee today. It's now expected that more students sitting their exams could be awarded higher grades. Those sitting exams at the end of third year currently receive grades in several bands. A distinction is awarded to those receiving over 90% in the exam. A higher merit is awarded to students scoring 75% but less than 90, while a merit is given to exam scores of 55% but less than 75%. Those who achieve 40% but less than 55% are said to have achieved, while partially achieved is given a result between 20% and 39%. However, Minister McEntee will today confirm that the grading of the top four bands will change. Distinction, higher merit, merit and achieve will now be evenly distributed in bands of 15 percentage points. So hopefully if you have a student that is doing their exams, that might be good news. Apparently, according to the Irish Daily Mail, it'll take up to 5 years of enforced deportation to resolve the current list of rejected asylum seekers who are waiting deportation, the Justice Department has revealed. Political concern has been growing over the implementation of plans to increase the number of flights taking deportees out of Ireland to at least one a month. The government earlier this year engaged in a high-profile deportation of failed asylum seekers to Georgia. I mean, they had the camera crews and everything on standby for that. However, Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan's concerned coalition colleague said that despite promises of more such flights this year to various destinations, this has been the sole flight. Senior Fine Gael figures said there should at least be one flight a month, but it's going to take 5 years at the current rate. And finally, there's a move away from coffee, according to the papers today, for Gen Zs. Gen Zs are ditching fancy coffee for the traditional cup of tea. According to research, nearly two-thirds had picked the bean-based beverage as their favourite hot drink last year, sparking fears for the traditional brew. But more than half of under 28s, 52%, now prefer a tea over a flat white latte or cappuccino. There you go. And we're joined on the programme now by the parish priest of Gwydolfar, Father Brian O'Farrey. Father Brian, how are you today?
Good morning, Greg, and thank you very much for having me. I'm good. As good as to be expected. I got a good night's sleep. Well, sort of good night's sleep last night, and we begin the day again today, and we face what has to be faced today again after the terrible events of yesterday, as you all know at this stage, what happened in Derrybeg and our beautiful church there, St Mary's.
And it was was a beautiful church, Father Brian. Yeah. It's just astonishing, isn't it, to see what remains when you reflect on what stood there before. And it's not just, the stone and the wood and the slate and the tile. Yeah. It's memories, it's funerals, it's christenings, yeah. It's the community.
It is, and you're very so right there in what you're saying. It was a beautiful church for a beautiful people. People of Gweedore, and it was their place of worship, since 1972, where they gathered, gathered in good times and in hard times and in sad times as well, where they laughed and smiled, and also where they shed a tear, and where hearts were broken for funerals and so on. But we have a beautiful word in Irish and Gaelic, Teach an Phobain. And, the house of the people, the people's house. And that's what St. Mary's Church in Derrybeg was. It was the house, not just of the people of Gweedore, but of the people of all of our visitors, our many friends who visited us down through the years as well. It was their spiritual home. And just to see it as it is at the moment, just an empty shell, it's heartbreaking. There's no point in me saying nothing else. That's what it is. It's just...
The emergency services were notified around about 4 a.m., I understand, Father Brian. When did you become, aware that something was happening and also, to the extent it was happening?
It was just shortly before 4 o'clock. I was in bed and I woke up and just heard noises outside the house, what I thought was coming from the side of the house. And I up out of bed and I kind of lifted the curtain of the bedroom and looked out and there was nothing to be seen. I went down into the sitting room and looked out the window, there was nothing to be seen, and I said, maybe it's on the back of the house. So I was going down the hallway and then the phone rang. The phone was in my room, and I knew then. I said, well, phone call at this hour in the morning, just before four, something, someone is in need of help or something is not right here. So when I answered the phone, Tan Chafo Bullard Hini, the church is burning, the church is burning, was a cry that I heard, and I went up the hallway and looked out the back window, and the sight that I saw is just etched in my mind. It will remain there. Secula seculorum, just the flames rising to the heaven. So I just rang 999 immediately and requested the fire brigade, and they put me through there, and the call had been logged previous to that, they said. So I just went and threw on my clothes as fast as I could and went outside, and It was frightful, for anyone who has experienced seeing a fire of that magnitude, or even a home being burnt or whatever it is. It's just fright. It just goes to the core of your being, just standing there knowing that there was absolutely nothing that I could do. Just seeing the intensity of the flames and the embers, it was like something you had seen in an inferno. The embers all falling down like snowflakes, just coming down even as far as the parochial house.
There must have been a great sense of, with you and those who I'm sure joined you, of helplessness. Now, obviously, we have our amazing emergency services that know what to do in these situations. But, you stand there looking on, and it's completely out of your control. You just have to observe.
Absolutely, and that was it. And, there was absolutely nothing that any of us who were standing there looking at it could do, because we knew then that the fire brigade had landed, our own team in Gweedore, and there are not enough words to express my gratitude for that team, for the wonderful team that we have in Gweedore, and they were assisted by their colleagues in Fulcara and Dunloe and Glenties and Donegal Town and Letterkenny and all around the county. And just when you see the fire brigade after fire brigade arriving there, and those men and women, they are brave people, and just kind of, I know that they're trained for that, and that's what they do. And just to see that happening, and to see, and for, I know that for our own team in Gweedore, that that's their church as well, and it's a church that means a lot to them, and to see them just kind of giving it their all, and they did that, and just not just the fire services, but also in Garda Síochána, who were there, making sure that everyone was safe and everyone was back, and just their dedication and their determination and professionalism, and the county council workers who arrived there in the morning, and just even just the local people as well, who started to gather, trying to help or support in whatever way. And the local priest, my brother priest as well. And at one stage then, knowing that we were helpless in the sense of fighting that fire, that we had to leave it in the hands of the professionals, we did what we could do then. We prayed as a community, and we offered a number of prayers, and just through those prayers there was tears shed. There was just there was sadness and sorrow, but also I was very conscious in my prayer and looking at all those men and women, the fire personnel and the Gardaí, operating as they did. That was a prayer in itself as well. The work that they did is a prayer, and we were eternally grateful.
And Father, I suppose, you know, obviously there's devastation there, but it's clear, I think, from the comments that I'm hearing from the community, that this will be a part of the church's history, that it's not an end, because there seems already a determination to rebuild, so that in 100, 200 years it will be remembered as the fire in 2025, but it's not the end.
It's not the end by no means, Greg, and you're right in saying that. You know, it's strange how people say that, you know, that history repeats itself. At Easter 1854, there was a church where the old church in Derrybeg stands now. There's a church before that, somewhere near that site. And at Easter 1854, that church had burnt to the ground, and they had built the old, and Shan Chapel built the old church as we know it. And then in 1972, they went to the church, St. Mary's Church, that was burnt at Easter. Easter Monday is yesterday. And so it's strange how it happened. But anyway, we let the investigations continue and this and that and what have you. But you're right in what you're saying. I'm so privileged to serve a community, the community and the people of Gweedore, and to be their parish priest for the past nearly 3 years at this stage, and to be curate for many years before that. I know the people, and they know me, and I've been with them. I've laughed with them, I've cried with them, and we've been through good times and bad times together, and I feel their pain, and I feel their sadness, as they feel my pain and my sadness as well at this time, because it's a spiritual home for all of us. But there's a courage, there's a wonderful resilience as well in the people, and just the messages that have poured in from the Archbishop, Eamon Martin, right across the globe, from Rome. I got messages from Rome, from Switzerland, from Germany, from a lot in Glasgow, and from USA, from England, and all parts of Ireland. I mean, people want to help, and they will help, and you know, because we have a great community, and our own diaspora as well, the people of Gweedore who've had to lift their sails and make their home maybe somewhere else in some other part of the world, but they still haven't forgot their roots, you know, that they know that home is home for them always, and that it's
and your local church is often that anchor in your home as well, because so much of our memories are there. So that's why I think it, and I'm sure, Father, you received your contacts from all over the place, but the sense of devastation yesterday morning was felt across the whole region. I know that myself, and a lot of people, you know, were saying prayers, going to their local church, chapel, etc. So hopefully you and the community have felt that and get the strength from that as you move forward. And you're in this situation now, aren't you, Father, whereby there's no call to speculate. It'll be investigated as to whether what may or may not have caused the fire. Is your suspicion that it started accidentally, or do we have such little information there's zero point even speculating?
There is no point, Greg, and I'm not giving you a short answer.
No, I understand.
I'm just leaving it, and I'm happy to leave it in the hands of the professionals who do their work on Garda Síochán and their technical team. And I've been well informed by the members of the local sergeant, John Joe McClafferty, and by the superintendent David Kelly, who was on the phone yesterday, just to inform me this is the format that takes place, and it's standard practice for them, and that they'll go through everything and rule out different possibilities and so on, and then hopefully come up with answers, and if there are answers to be had, or maybe it is something, maybe just an electrical or whatever, we don't know at this stage. What we do know is the church is as it is at the moment, and that the church will not remain like that going forward, that we have a body of work to do. And I know that the people of Guidoor and our many friends all around will put their shoulder to the wheel and will help us out and support us in many different ways, because we do have that great community, and there's a sense of family, and there's a wonderful force behind all of this as well. And that, you know, when you think of you know, that every storm, that there's a quiet strength behind every storm. Okay. That certainly is a storm for us at the moment. And yesterday, but that strength is what is going to carry us through going forward. And I have great faith and great belief in that. And this too will pass, and out of this fire, wonderful things will happen. And you know, out of death, our faith is that out of death, that new life, that the resurrection and life eternal is there. And it's kind of very ironic that the last ceremony that we had there in the church was the Easter Sunday ceremony. The place was packed to the gills, back to the rafters, and we had a wonderful celebration, a joyful occasion, and the choir singing wonderfully, and many visitors and guests to our community joining us for that. And and just to think now today that the place is just like an empty shell, but it's that Easter message, I think, also that when you think of on Easter Sunday, the empty tomb, but that's not the end, the empty tomb, because the resurrection and life eternal. So out of the empty tomb of St. Mary's Church at the moment will come new life, and a wonderful new life for the people that I'm so privileged to serve.
Okay. Father Brian O'Farrell, thank you so very much indeed. The parish priest of Guidoor, and you can see from Father Brian's words why he's such a popular parish priest, and inspires hope even when it seems all hope is gone, but it hasn't. Mary Coyle is joining us on the show as well. Mary, I'm sure like me, listening intently to what Father Brian had to say there. How did you learn that the fire had broken out?
I think about 4:45 or about 4:25, about that, I got the call that the church was on fire, and immediately Father Brian and I are friends that go back for years, and we went straight down there to support Father Brian and the other priests in the parish. It was, as Father Brian said, it was awful. It was just awful, and we couldn't do anything. We stood there, we prayed, we cried. You know, it was devastating. It was just devastating to stand and watch that church burn. It
must have been very traumatic, Mary, for those of you that were watching. You know, and I'm sure that's still with you, the trauma of seeing that.
It was the sense of helplessness, because there was nothing you could do, you know, but it was also solidarity, how we stood together and supported each other. Father Brian is an amazing parish priest, and Father Shane was there, Father Donahoe, and it was just a sense of togetherness, and that is what will help everybody through this, Greg. We have the best parish. We have the best parish that stands together when we need to stand together. And already you can see we're working at a GoFundMe, which will be live later on today, and which we'll share with you. And as Father Brian said, the messages from all over the world asking, how can we help? And this is how everybody can help. We will rebuild the church again. We will be there and we'll rebuild the church again. We have amazing people here in Guidoor. And when we need to do something, we will do it. And we will support our priests in the parish as much as we can. And this is something we have to do. And there isn't a better place that will see this through than Guidoor.
Yes, I've no doubt, and I can sense the passion. I can hear it, Mary. Stay there. Deputy Piers Doherty is with us as well. Piers, you live close to the chapel, like many in the area. Many milestones in your family's life are sort of intertwined with it. It's not just a building, and no one has ever suggested it is it? It's the community. It's the hub. It's it's devastating, but there is hope this morning. And I see you nodding along with Mary and Father Brian. There is that sense that it'll come again.
Yeah, Greg, and look, you know, that's exactly it. It isn't just a building and a roof. It isn't just a fire. It's something that was taken from us yesterday morning, the early hours of Easter Monday, because it was all those memories. It's why so many people, when they heard the news, you know, just bust into tears, because it is, as Father Brian says, it's a place where we got comfort, a place where we went for solace, a place for where we cried, where we laughed, where we celebrated, where, you know, like it's my own family's journey is there in terms of my wedding, the christening of our kids. We've confirmation coming up next month that was supposed to be in the church. And that's it's such a big part in terms of the community. And yourself and Mary mentioned just about Father Brian, but I don't think there's words that can actually explain just that Father Brian himself. He's not just, you know, the parish priest and somebody who's central to the spiritual guidance of the parish, but he is a fantastic person, a community activist, and somebody who pulls this parish together. And I know yesterday just there was a very silent and a vocal determination as well in terms of rebuilding and comforting Father Brian and all of us coming together in that process, as Mary said, will start today. But to say that we're gutted would be an understatement, to say that there's a loss that has been felt across the parish of Gidor. And it's strange to say that, because nobody has passed away, nobody has lost their life, but there is something that has passed, there's something that has been lost, and we're very, very, very sad as a result of it. And you know, look, it was just absolutely devastating. It's still devastating, what, you know, going across the road and looking at a church that stood proud for over half a century, and to see it just as an empty shell. And you know, and all of the work that was done by the fire services, the Gardaí, everybody who was on site, you know, just couldn't quell that fire. It just was far too big. And I want to pay tribute to them as well. But particularly to the, you know, as we're all hurting, I know that the priests, Father Brian as the parish priest, and all of the clergy are really, really hurting today as well. And we give them all of our solidarity and sympathy. Mm-hmm. But the best thing that we can do is make sure that we rebuild. And I know that there's an outpouring of support, not only right across the county that I've got as well, messages of support, but right across the country and further afield. And we'll harness that today and in the weeks ahead.
Okay, Deputy Doherty, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Mary, details of that GoFundMe page are being finalised now. And I think things like that are useful in that... you know, even it's different maybe when you're in the community directly, but sometimes when you're removed from something, you want to do something, but it's difficult. And, you know, people can say they move from Gwydor and they're in Australia. They can feel upset, but they feel helpless as well. So that's why, thanks to modern technology now, everyone everywhere, if they want to help to restore this church to its former glory and beyond, perhaps, in fact, we'll be able to do so. You'll let us know when that's up and running.
I will indeed, Greg, and it was amazing, you know, when we talk about technology, that the word was in Australia quicker than some of the people in Gidor got the word. So it is that outpouring of grief all around the world of Gidor people, and the texts, the messages, wanting to help, wanting to send money. So this is an opportunity for us to stand together and to rebuild Chafa Balwara.
Yeah, and even though we're only just over 24 hours removed from it, I do sense and see the growth of hope, you know, coming out of the flames, the sprouts of hope, and even maybe looking forward to what it can become. Do you know what I mean? Already, even soon afterwards, the sprouts of hope are emerging.
And that's it, Greg. And it's lovely, you know, it's an opportunity for us to build something new and fantastic. It's lovely when the people of Gidor get together. We always see that we look ahead. There's no point now in looking behind. There is people that will take care of that building now, and we know that we must, as a parish, look ahead and support Father Brian, Father Brendan, Father Shane, and all of the clergy. And that's what we'll do. And we do that best here.
Yes, indeed. I knew you were a proud Gwyddor woman, Mary. I just never knew how proud you were.
But every
word you say is the God's honest truth. Thanks so very much, Mary. Take care of yourself. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That is Mary Coyle there reflecting on the awful events in Gwyddor yesterday. And there might be some listening that don't get it, that believe it's just a building or no one's dead. But there are those too that understand how important these churches are. Even in Deputy Pierce Doherty's case, and he never mentioned, you know, you get married there, your children are christened there, and that the joy is there as well. And I know with my own chapel in Ballintra, then the sad times come. His father was his father's funeral mass was there. And in fact, I believe his father's anniversary mass was due to be held there last night. So that's what, you know, the local place of worship means. It's everything to an awful lot of people. Okay, if you want to reflect on your memories, positive memories as well, of course, because, you know, people will have those, and they can't be extinguished because they're your memories. They're with you forever. If you wish to share them, let us know on 086 60 25,000. Yesterday morning, just as I was trying to get the information out on Highland Radio and what have you in relation to that fire in Derrybeg, that devastating fire, more news landed, and that was the passing of Pope Francis. And whilst perhaps, I mean, it's expected for all of us, all right, but we know that Pope Francis has been unwell as of late, and there is a level of expectation, but still it's a tremendous shock when the news is formally announced. Mary Hart, a regular contributor to this programme, of course, a broadcaster and journalist, is actually in St. Peter's Square in Rome. Mary and her family just happened to be in Rome for a few days, and Mary joins me now. Mary, thank you very much for your time. Very, very sad news, but what does it feel like to actually be there?
You know, it's you come to Rome, and in fact, we probably didn't expect that we would see the Pope, but he did, as you will know, appear on the balcony, and he did go around in the Pope mobile here. And, you know, it was wonderful to be here at a time to witness that. And then it was the shock the next morning when the news came through here about 7:30 in the morning that he had passed away. It's a very historic time, I suppose, for anyone, no matter what religion that you come from, that's this very important figure in world affairs, and has been, you know, has passed away. But, you know, he leaves an enormous legacy. And I suppose, you know, what I would like to say first is, you know, the fact that Father Eamon McLaughlin, that he did request that he is buried in the St. Mary's Major in the Basilica. So that's Father McLaughlin. People may or may not know that he is originally from Downings. And then the Irish Monsignor Flannery is in charge of the Vatican at the moment until a new Pope is elected. As far as we understand, they are gathering just behind me now in the Sistine Chapel, the Cardinals, to decide on the next Pope, and also to decide on the funeral arrangements for Pope Benedict, for Pope. Sorry.
Yeah, Pope Francis. What is the sense of what is the sense there, Mary? Why do people travel, you know, today, given the news to St. Peter's Square? Is it to be with other people? Is it to reflect? Is it to stand in history, I suppose, to some extent? Have you spoken to many people?
Well, I suppose, speaking from our own perspective, you know, we came here because it's an important place to visit when you're in Rome. You know, it would be, you would never not be in Rome and not visit here. And I think there are queues and queues of people. There is a pilgrimage, which is a jubilee year at the moment, and that means there are pilgrimages passing through here constantly, as there were yesterday and the day before. And I don't know if you probably cannot see behind me, but there's a very long.
If you could
queue.
Just maybe, could you slightly rotate the phone, Mary? Because but if you actually just turn it on its side for us, because the picture is the picture is off to one side, if you know what I mean. Okay, we'll get that done now. We might have.
Can you see that?
Okay, unfortunately, that line has that line has broken down on us. We might actually touch base with Mary a little later on in the show as well, actually, if that's okay. Caroline might talk to Mary off air about that. Mary Hart, broadcaster and journalist. She's currently in St. Peter's Square in Rome. And for those of you watching, we are introducing some sort of live images from Rome, St. Peter's Square. You can see the people milling around there over the course of the morning. 086 60 25 000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25 000, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000. Okay, we can go to Joe now, who's with us on line one. Hi, Joe. You are amongst a relatively select few, of course, in that you happened upon Pope Francis in St. Peter's Square in Rome.
Well, first things, Greg, I'd just like to say, send on our thoughts to Father Brian and the community. Myself and Mary and the family would know Father Brian very well, so just first thing to do that. The second thing is we actually when we were in Rome, the family had sent us to Rome for our 25th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And it was a lovely trip and everything was going great. And on the Tuesday morning, that was the 21st of February 2017, and on that Tuesday morning we decided we'd go up and look to see could we get the audience. There was an audience on the Wednesday morning, and it was the first outdoor audience of the year. So we chanced our arm, we went in, we said we were from Ireland, first time in Rome, first time visit, and that our anniversary was taking place, and threw the hat in the ring, and they did say to us, look, we will text you in the morning if you're lucky to get the tickets. So lo and behold, we got a text on the Wednesday morning at 7:30, and we just thought, this is fantastic, because Mary, my wife, is a very avid photographer, and she's been putting up pictures of Trevi Fountain and the Colosseum and the usual. And she just said to me, she says, wouldn't it be lovely if we could just get one picture of the Pope in the square? So anyway, to make a long story short, we headed for the office up at the Basilica and we were handed these tickets. And the system there is a three-tier system. There's a bottom tier, you have a middle tier and you have a top tier. And we were eyeing up, the bottom tier was pretty packed, but we were eyeing up seats and they're saying, God, Mary, you'll get a great picture there and things like that. But anyway, we met this big guard, is all I can describe him, and he took us up to this first gate and we actually ended up walking past the first tier. So I said to Mary, this is looking good. I said, we're in the second tier, I would say, by the sound of things. And so anyway, he passed us over to this Swiss guard, who then marches up past the second tier. And we actually ended up on the top tier where the Pope was going to address the people. Now, I hope I'm not going to be too long-winded here, but the top tier, there was a lot of people there, but there was also like two fences, and you walked in one and there was seating. And it was just round this one area. And little did we know at that time that that was actually a greet and meet area where you got to meet the Pope.
Wow.
So it was like getting the golden ticket. So eventually when the Pope had finished addressing the people, he came round and it was just so spectacular. There's no other word for it, really. It was just to meet this man, I can't explain it. Myself and Mary both still look at each other and say, you know, how lucky we were to meet him, because there was no rush. He actually stood and talked to us. We said we were from Ireland on our anniversary. We could hardly talk, by the way. Truth was told. But you know, that was just the feeling of meeting him, and he just took his time with everyone when he went round.
Yeah, we're watching the picture of you and the Pope, Joe, Pope Francis, yeah. And it's just incredibly natural. He's given sort of a sideways smile to the camera, and just... Yeah. Like a regular person, which I believe is how he wanted to conduct his business, didn't he? In that, to reach all people. But that comes across, he seems slightly more pleased to be in a photo with your wife, though maybe she's slightly more charming than you are, Mary. But I'm sure these photos take pride of place in the house, do they?
Well, I have to warn you of something now. The last man I talked to about this was Sean. and he ended up being a priest. So you better watch yourself.
I think Sean was always destined to be a priest. I think I'm quite the opposite. Well, not the opposite. My word, that makes me sound terrible. But so it's happenstance. It just was meant to be. And I remember when, I don't know how it happened to be, but we were in Coventry when Pope John Paul II. I was very young. He visited, and I remember getting on. I remember Dad parking the car and us getting on red buses. But there was a great sense of even as a young person, there was a great sense of something significant having happened as he passed us. Right? Yes. Did you? And there's other priests as well. Father Macaulay, the ex parish priest, the former parish priest in Ballantra, that, you know, when you shook his hand, you got a sense of something. I really don't know how to describe it, okay? Well, but it was just a sense. But what did you get?
You're describing
that?
It perfect. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I the only thing is, I'm not over enamored with things in life. You know, I get on with my life. I'm a musician and a teacher by trade. And I love my music. I've went to concerts. I would never idolize anyone in respect of music. But when I went up onto that tier and that man came round, I'm leaving it hanging like this. I can't express the feeling I had. And Mary exactly the same. And I'm sure it was the same for everyone. Don't get me wrong. What we went through on that day was so surreal, you know. Even to be where we were, it's a memory that's going to be with me until the day I die, and it's the same with Mary, you know, until the day she dies. It was just very, very special.
Yeah, but you're greatly assisted in having very special photos.
Yeah, well, this is it. But just what you said, it's a very hard thing to explain to people, that feeling. It really is. It really was a very touching moment and a tearful moment. And I mean, you know, it was that type of moment. And when we got the news yesterday morning, obviously, about his passing, it was, I did get a shock, I have to say. I wasn't expecting that at all. Mm-hmm. Because we'd watched him in Rome that morning, and he was going round on the Easter Sunday, and you didn't expect. In fact, we were kind of looking, saying, "God, maybe we'll get another couple of years out of him yet." You know. But it wasn't to be.
Okay, Joe. Listen,
but it was fantastic.
It is a wonderful, wonderful personal story, and it just goes to show we're connected to everything here in Donegal, one way or other, aren't we? And a wonderful thing for you and Mary, and a wonderful thing for you to share, actually, as man and wife as well. I think that's particularly special. So love to Mary. Thanks very much, Joe.
Yeah.
And
thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on and talking to us. Take care of yourself. I want to see if I can go back to Mary Hart in St. Peter's Square in Rome. Mary, obviously we're relying on the phone network over there, which is under a lot of pressure. Yeah, okay. We might actually just see if we can do the old telephone, just in case that sustains a little bit better. So saddened by the... right, I just have to be careful with the wording on that one. There is obviously another story that broke over the weekend. And as you would know, Eddie Gallagher, parish priest, has been... taken into custody. It's following one of these stings, and he is going to be appearing in court. Now, very, very shocking for an awful lot of people. We cannot do anything that might compromise the police investigation in relation to that. So I understand people are very saddened by what they witnessed, very difficult to watch and what they've been hearing. But we are, because people are presumed innocent until proven otherwise, we are a little bit hamstrung in this media space because of laws that govern what we do, how much we can say. But I do want to recognise the devastation that's out there. Mary Hart, sorry about that. The images were lovely
because we were
able to sort of get a sense of your experience. But we're watching live images from St. Peter's Square, and we can listen to your voice now. And you were painting a picture for us, Mary.
Yeah, you know, as I said, we were here by accident. We came on a trip to Rome, not expecting to see Pope Francis at all because of his illness, and certainly not expecting that he would pass away while we were here. So for us, it's an extremely historic time to be in Rome, and everybody else who's here, you know, will recall that they were in Rome on that particular day. There's a lot of people here, long, long queues, which is a norm at the Vatican to get inside the chapel, but it's particularly crowded today. And I suppose that's for that very reason. People want to get inside the Vatican. We don't know much about the preparations for when the funeral will take place, or lying, as he may do, if the right word is lying in state. But the Basilica, and to the right of that is the Sistine Chapel, which is where we visited actually on Friday, on Good Friday. That is where the cardinals are all meeting today at the moment as we speak. And that is when they'll decide when the funeral is going to be. And also when the lying in state will be what they decide then as well.
Yeah.
And for people to come then. So, I mean, I suppose for me, Pope Francis, being, you know, the Jesuit, being from Latin America, being very much his last Urbi et Orbi, saying that, you know, the war is bad. He did highlight Gaza, Myanmar, you know, Palestine, you know, all of the conflicts, Ukraine, that are going on, has appealed to our leaders to stop conflicts, which is what his body and soul has been. His life has been dedicated to helping the poor, but also the planet. You know, he has been someone who has, you know, for as hard as he could, he was a reforming pope. That is definitely what his legacy is going to be, that he was someone who opened the conversations. He may not have achieved as much, but, you know, in particular things, and I actually, you know, thought of my mother, Rosalind, yesterday, because when the referendum on the marriage equality, and I didn't ask her how she voted, but her words when she came out of the polling station was, I took my lead from the pope, and he said, who am I to judge? So essentially, he reached into people of that generation as well as you know, the younger generation by being proactive in looking at the issues of modern day living and how we should embrace goodness and not anger and all of that. You know. So
yeah, you made you made a really interesting reference too, of course, to Monsignor Eamon McLaughlin. He last April was appointed canon of the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major in Rome. And we know, although it has to be decided by the Vatican, that Pope Francis's wish was to be laid to rest there. And there's another connection there which feels significant to me as well, in the aftermath of the awful Chrysler tragedy, in which we lost 10 people and many more injured. It was Monsignor McLaughlin that raised that issue with Pope Francis and was able then to convey Pope Francis's thoughts and prayers back to the bereaved community, which, you know, is another strong connection between us and Pope Francis, I feel, anyway.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, and he, by that very act himself, means that he was in touch with the tragedies and the atrocities around the world. You know, and far from for him, you know, Ireland, the northwest corner of Europe. But certainly, you know, when he came to Dublin, he went down to the Capuchin Friary where, you know, the Jesuits and the Franciscans have been feeding the poor for long before soup kitchens, you know, appeared. They were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He went there and, you know, he met all of the friars there too. So, you know, he traveled the world as best he could. And if you were to look at him, you know, not just a religious leader, he was a world leader who called for good. It wasn't that he was, you know, preaching Catholicism. Of course, he's a leader of the Catholic Church in the world, but he was more than that, much more than that. And I think everyone will respect that he had the ear of world leaders. And hopefully, his last message here on Sunday to world leaders to look at, you know, ceasing the conflicts that are, you know, destroying children. In particular, he was particularly anxious about, you know, children, young children being bombed in this conflict. That was to the heart of what his message was on Sunday.
Mary Hart, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
That's a pleasure, yeah.
You know, I really do appreciate it. And safe journey home to you and your family. Do take care of yourself. Mary Hart there, speaking to us from St. Peter's Square in Rome. Back after the news and obituary notices in the next hour, Community Garda information.